So I was actually quite happy when Randy asked me a few months ago if I would come lead a discussion with you all on this, because I had started to see this kind of topic both in the press and around the MIT campus and so forth. And one nice thing about an MIT, being an MIT faculty member, what you realize is learning is the most interesting thing. So being asked to lead a discussion gives me the opportunity to learn. So the one thing that will become clear, so I might as well tell it to you now, I'm not an expert in this particular field. I've tried to learn enough about it to formulate some of my own ideas and to help lead a discussion with you all. But I know there's other folks sitting at these tables here who know more about some aspects of it than I do. So it's a discussion. I've got about a half hour worth of material, by and large, so we should have plenty of time. I want to motivate it by the sort of thing that came to Randy's attention and many others, and this was all in about March. A New York Times article headline, "Scientists Seek Ban on Method of Editing the Human Genome." NPR started to have shows on it, All Things Considered, has followed up with some others. The MIT Technology Review had a featured story with an even more provocative title, "Engineering the Perfect Baby." So it's and if you're paying attention at all, you're just seeing it all over the news. And so we thought this would be a good topic of discussion. The way I want to go about it is first spend a little while on some of the scientific background, because it's, to me, this is one of the most important things about the Christian and science interface, is for Christians to understand the science as best they can so that our point of view can be taken with respect and seriously, because we are informed. And by being informed, then our Christian points of view really do need to be heard. And then the last part will be to go into some of the key issues, issues about ethics, safety, value, and we'll run through a lot of different things. So we've got questions along the way. Happy to have them to make sure we're all on the same page of understanding. And then I'm sure once we get into the issues, that will lead to a lot of discussion that I won't even need to talk. So here's what started that really was the proximal cause most recently. There's a paper that just came out in early April in a journal called Protein and Cell, which is not one of the high-level journals. In the sort of molecular biology field, from a group in China, titled CRISPR-Cas9 Gene Editing in Human Zygotes. And all of these stories were in March, and the reason was that people in the field were now reviewing this manuscript and some others that were being submitted to journals, so everybody became aware that this kind of work was going on. I'll give you some of the timeline of CRISPR-Cas9, this technology, but it really started the buzz when manuscripts came in, said people are trying to apply this to editing genomes in embryos. So that's why these stories predate the actual first paper. And I'm going to go into a lot of this in more detail, but what they did was take essentially a very early, just fertilized oocyte, and use this technology that I'm going to explain in a minute to edit one of the genes in the genome of the resulting embryos. And ostensibly, there was an application, one of these genetic diseases, where the hemoglobin gene is mutated, and if they could unmutate it, then these the resulting organisms, the humans in this case, wouldn't have this disease. Now, the argument was that they did it in called a tripronuclear zygote. It's basically one of the things that happens when an egg is fertilized in vitro or in vivo with multiple sperms simultaneously. So it actually starts with three nuclei instead of two. And by and large, these tripronuclear zygotes, if implanted, don't lead to viable births, although that's not universally true. There are reports that this could, in fact, lead to viable birth. Nonetheless, they didn't take it that far. So I'll go through this a little bit later. They showed that they could edit that mutant gene, but they had some issues. Off-target effects were apparent. The edited embryos were mosaic, which meant some of them got edited and some of them didn't. And so you'll see this come up when we talk about the safety issues. But this really was the tangible paper that has set everything off. All right, let me explain a little bit. I'm going to show you two static cartoons just to get you oriented. And then I'm going to show you a very nice video that will go through this in real time with a very articulate narrator. But I think if you see these cartoons first, then the video will be more meaningful. So the idea is this. If you have in your chromosome a gene that you want to edit, you want to knock it out, cause it to not transcribe into messenger RNA and protein, or replace it by another one, this new technology, and I'll explain something about its origins a little bit later, called CRISPR-Cas9. CRISPR has to do with the set of nucleic acid repeats, more or less. Cas9 is an enzyme that will cleave your DNA and create a gap, a double-strand break in it. So the way it works is if you want to cleave a particular section of the DNA, what you have to do is find what's called a guide RNA, a set of about 20 nucleic acid bases that match the target that you want to cleave. And if you get that right, then Cas9 as an enzyme will bind to that guide RNA. The guide RNA will guide it to the right location on the DNA. And once it's there, this enzyme will undertake its cleavage action and cleave it right at the location. So the guide RNA puts it in the right place, the enzyme does the cleavage. Okay. CRISPR just stands for something having to do with the DNA structure. So this is another view of it, that here's the DNA, here's the guide RNA guiding the Cas9 to the right location, undertakes its enzymatic activity and creating a break, and then a couple things can happen. There's different ways to repair the break. Cells don't like broken DNA, so they have multiple ways of repairing it. And depending on the way it's repaired, what happens to the gene is different. So there's one method of repair that essentially will just tie the two ends right there together and has essentially now deleted some of the nucleic acid sequences that are there. And so the gene, if this is designed right, just won't express. Okay, the gene is just gone. Another repair mechanism joins the broken ends and can replace them by inserting something that has the same ends. So you can actually insert another piece of DNA with a plasmid, say, that has a gene that you want with the right ends, and then it'll actually insert your gene in the place of what it took out. So you can either take something out or you can put something in. If you put something in, it can be the same gene, but mutated, or whatever. I want to show you this. If you look in the literature, you can buy these kinds of enzymes and the guide RNA informatics programs for how to do it. And if you look across the literature, they were showing that something about the efficiency. My point of showing this is the efficiency is not uniformly 100%. You've got to get this guide RNA, get the enzyme expressed in the cells you're interested in. They've got to be there at the right concentrations and find their way. And so I just want to point out that the efficiency is generally significantly less than 100%, although people are working on this, of course. Yes, sir?
I wonder also about the selectivity.
Yeah, absolutely. Selectivity is not perfect. We will get to that. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so here's a good time for the video. So I think you've got the static pictures and things make sense. Let me turn this video on for you. It's from the McGovern Institute at MIT.